Hello and welcome to Linoleum Knife. Across the table from me is Dave White, film critic for Movies.com.
I'm being oppressed.
Because I made you put the Garnett Hill catalog away before we started? Yeah. Viewers did not, or listeners did not want to hear those pages turning. It's annoying. You don't know how bad it sounds through the mic.
They care about us and our well-being, and we need some new towels.
Well, you can shop for new towels when we're done with this.
All right.
You can introduce me ever?
Oh, yeah. Are we ever gonna you're Alonzo Duralde.
Thank you.
And you are the DVD editor. You're the DVD
every week
editor of MovieLine.com.
We go through this.
And you are also...
You don't need to tell... No, drop it.
You're so many things, though.
And so are you.
You're so many things to me as well. So many things to me that you are.
Oh, now you're being gross. Okay. Before we get rolling this week, I wanted to acknowledge the passing of a great American filmmaker, Sidney Lumet, or Lumet, however it is that you pronounce it.
Really or know. Lumet.
Or like Lumet, they called
him on some website.
Some idiot radio station in New York called him, who had an extraordinary film career. He started out doing live television and then made his feature debut with 12 Angry Men. And over the course of a 50-year career, made tons of movies, many of them great, some of them not so great, but covering a broad spectrum, everything from Dog Day Afternoon to Murder on the Orient Express to Just Tell Me What You Want to The Wiz to...
Speaking of the not-so-great.
That was one of the not-so-great ones, yes. His last film was the extraordinary...
I remember seeing, when The Wiz came out, an ad in like People magazine or something for Congolium.
Yes, because they did the Yellow Brick Road. I remember that.
They made the Yellow Brick Road.
I remember the Congolium ads.
So, and I remember thinking, I was just a kid, but I remember thinking, so are you supposed to get Yellow Brick Road kind of Congolium for your kitchen floor?
I guess they offered
it. Is that why?
They must have had a tie-in.
Was it part of their line, do we think?
Yeah, like, there's a little picture of Diana Ross on the box. But anyway,
that just made me think of that.
His last film was a terrific crime thriller called Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. He also did, The Verdict and Prince of the City, and he's like one of the quintessential New York directors. But obviously did all kinds of movies in all kinds of places. And his film, Network, of course, one of the great American films ever, and. Dog Day Afternoon is listed in my book 101 Must See Movies for Gay Men. So anyway, he was great, and he's gone. And
how old was he?
I think he's 80s. I think.
Oh, so he was in his 80s.
I believe so.
So he was the normal age to be old and die.
I think so. Yes.
And he didn't die of anything. He just died of being old.
I'm sure there's something specific. I don't have it in front of me. I would recommend people go to Salon.com and read our friend Matt Zoller Seitz's obituary. I believe the headline is "He Made Movies for Grown-Ups," which is as good a description as you can get of Lumet's extraordinary career.
And now nobody does.
Pretty much. Yeah. Sadly, that is true. That's mostly borne out by this week's show, although there are some exceptions. So,
yeah.
There are exceptions. We'll begin with
Your Highness is a very grown up movie.
That was not one I was thinking of.
When I think of grown up movie, I think Your Highness.
Oh man, no one on Your Highness was thinking is what I think.
I just say your thing.
Okay.
Do whatever you want to do.
This was the first time where after the movie I was like, you know what? Let's talk about this on the podcast. We're not even going to discuss this.
Go ahead, start
now.
Talking.
I was so not amused by Your Highness. The premise is basically that it's a sword and sorcery movie with like dick jokes and cursing and drug references. And that might be funny once, but the whole movie has one joke, and the whole joke is, prithee upon yon blah 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 fair maiden blah 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 mfer. You know, like that's the joke.
Mfer?
Yeah, this is a non-cursing
mother,
show.
Mother effer, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Got it.
So, so
I thought you said mfer.
No, mfer.
This is a name that I forgot that was in the movie. Right.
So, like, that's it. That's the joke of the movie, and it's not a very funny joke. And so,
kind of funny. I laughed several times at those jokes.
You laughed a bunch.
I did laugh a bunch.
And I was just like not getting it. And I love all the people involved. I think Danny McBride's really funny.
He is.
He and David Gordon Green and James Franco previously collaborated on Pineapple Express, which I thought was a very funny movie.
Danny McBride was in All the Real Girls.
Yes.
He's been in several David Gordon Green movies.
Yeah. And but this just didn't work for me. It didn't work. I didn't laugh. I thought it was, and the thing is, I didn't think it was outrageous enough to be sort of a takeoff of the sword and sorcery thing. But even as a sort of straightforward kind of, knights and maidens and dragons movie, it was boring. So there was nothing to fall back on. It didn't work for me as a jape of the genre. It didn't work for me as the genre itself.
Jape.
I didn't like it. I did not have fun. But you laughed. Explain yourself.
There's no explanation. There's no explanation for that. There's no... I think people should be allowed, and I think people should just embrace the idea of the bad movie that they somehow, for whatever reason, wind up enjoying themselves.
Oh, no, we all have them.
And I don't mean a movie like The Room.
No.
I mean a crap movie.
Right.
Like a crap normal movie.
Yeah.
That is made by, reasonably, competent people.
And that for one reason or other just tickles your fancy. Believe me, I've had those.
I was actually embarrassed the other night because you and I were standing in line waiting to get into a press screening of Meek's Cutoff, the new Kelly Reichert.
Which we'll be discussing
momentarily. Reichert?
I think it's
Reichert. How do you pronounce her last name?
I've heard Reichert.
Reichert?
Yeah.
Anyway, Meek's Cutoff. We're standing in line, and people are just standing around talking. Oh, what have you seen? What do you like? What have you seen? What do you like? And I don't know why this always happens to me. This happens to me a lot. Where
you're Armand White?
No, where people will be like, "Oh, that sucked. That sucked. That sucked. What did you think?" And I'll be like, "I laughed a little bit all through the whole movie." So who's standing in this line silently observing all of us? But Kenneth Turan,
right?
Like
the Los Angeles Times,
five people down.
Yeah,
he's like one of the the big deal movie critics, and I could just see him listening and looking at us all like knuckleheaded. Dim-witted jerk-offs,
he's like, nice.
I'm sure he's nice. I don't know him at all, but I'm sure I know his face.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's nice, but I could just feel the judgment coming from
him.
He's
been doing this for a long time. I'm sure he could give a rat's ass what any of us thought about anything.
No, just in that moment. I know he didn't carry it along with him after the experience, but in that moment, I could just feel the... Take me away from these people talking about your highness, and especially that goony dude that thought it was funny. I laughed a lot at your highness. It's not a good movie.
Mm.
It is a bad movie. Mm. Am I banging the mic
too
much?
You're okay.
It is a bad movie, and I understand that. I get it's stupid and dull and uninspired, and every few minutes, I was just giggling through the whole thing, going, penises,
Look, you don't have to explain. We all, I gave a positive review to Dragon Ball Evolution because it was so...
Yes, you did.
Because it was ridiculous, but I had a really good time.
I just, I thought Natalie Portman was kind of funny. And she's like, I'm going to burn them one by one in a symphony of shrieks. And I just thought, that's funny. That made me laugh.
Yeah.
I can't defend...
I hear you.
...myself at all. But...
Look, I'm glad you had fun. I had hoped to have fun. I went in... when I heard that this movie existed, I thought, oh, well, this could be fun. This could be interesting. And then every trailer I saw, I was like, wow, I'm not... laughing at this is not funny.
Yeah.
And I kept holding out hope that it's Universal and their trailers for Bridesmaids right now are awful, and that movie's actually really funny. I liked it a lot. I saw it in Austin, and so it's just so I was giving it the benefit of the doubt all the way in, and then I saw the actual movie. It's like, wow, no, the trailers didn't lie, this is not funny. But funny is subjective, so if you laughed, I can't I'm not gonna... As you would tell me if the situation were reversed, you're wrong.
But I know I'm wrong. That's the thing. I know I'm wrong. And I don't, yeah.
And you don't want to be right.
I would like to be right.
I would like to be right. If loving your highness is wrong.
I would like to be right. But I don't know. I don't know. Let's the next movie.
Okay, fine. Well, you brought up Meek's Cutoff, so we can talk about that.
You know what the thing is? I gave in this week and started reading comments.
Oh, boy. Always a bad idea.
And the most comments were on Your Highness. At movies.com. And this is the one thing that really baffles me is when you say in a review, and I said exactly in the review what I just said here, not a good movie. Somehow I laughed anyway. It right. catches you at the right moment.
Sure.
In the right weakened mental state, you know.
And you were not high. Let's be very clear about that.
So, I said that in the review, and people are like crapping all over me, like, you're a jerk, you know, like for dislike, for saying it's bad.
And laughing anyway.
Like, how, what do you say? Like, if you don't like something enough, they get really angry.
No, look, there's no.
I know this path lies madness, trying to figure out internet commenters.
Half the time, they are voraciously defending a movie that they haven't even seen yet. Because my reviews, you know, like at MSNBC used to go up on like a Wednesday and I would get people crap. I'm like, you haven't even seen the movie yet. You've just decided that you want
to
see it.
It hasn't come to the theater yet.
You've decided that you want to see it. And so you're going to shoot the messenger because I'm telling you that it's crap. And so I'm an idiot, but you haven't seen the movie. So bite me.
The other crazy thing is, and I've said this before, but the comments are always like, they prove that actually no one's even reading the review.
Yeah.
No one's even reading the review. They're just like, they see the star rating and they go bananas and start yelling at you.
Yeah.
You know, before they even read, they haven't just not seen the movie. They haven't read the review.
Yeah, well, here's what I learned about myself from reading the occasional internet comments.
Right.
Particularly on the YouTube stuff, like for What the Flick.
Oh, well, yeah.
Turns out...
You're fat.
I'm fat.
Also gay.
And I'm gay. Which, thank God they pointed that out to me, because it could completely eluded me all the time.
I was fixing to tell you both of those things.
Well, you need to step it up, because the internet comments...
I didn't want to hurt your feelings.
Wait, you know, I can live with it. It would have been better coming from you, though, really, I think. Than strangers on the internet.
You're a whole bunch of gay fat.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now I know. It's good to know. Moving on. Meek's Cutoff.
No homo.
Meek's Cutoff is the new film from, we think her name is Kelly Reichardt.
We know that's her name. We don't know how to pronounce it.
Yes. And she goes back a long way with Todd Haynes. I didn't realize. I was just reading an interview with him on IndieWire where apparently they're doing a 20th anniversary Poison DVD coming out in June that Zeitgeist is releasing, and there's all these Polaroids that Kelly shot on the set of the film, so she goes way, way back with him, which is why he's like executive producer on all of her movies.
Yeah.
And now I know you're a fan of her stuff. Have you seen the first one?
The one from the 90s?
Yeah.
I have not seen that one.
I always want to call it Leaves of Grass, but that's a Walt Whitman joke.
Yeah, right.
It's something of grass.
Yeah. No, anyway. That is the one I have not seen.
Okay. Well, that's a Strand movie. I'm sure we could find it.
But yeah, we could easily find it. Call your bro. Get a DVD sent over. That's that fast.
Yes.
Yeah. Tell him we'll talk about it.
Fine. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
It'll be our DVD pick of the week.
Right.
But she's best known for her more recent films, Old Joy and Wendy and Lucy. And now this film, which is sort of a departure for her in that it's her first period piece, right?
Unless the one from the 90s is a period piece.
This is true. Anyway. But it's also got a very large cast and kind of a...
More than two people is a large cast. Well, that's
true. Yeah, I mean, there's, a dozen people in this movie? But it feels like it's a mad world.
It doesn't matter that it's a large cast because... Well, tell them what it's about, and then I'll tell
okay, my cast. It's about three families and a guide making their way across the plains... to Oregon in ye old frontier times.
1845.
Right, they tell you to be in the movie, 1845. So it's, you know, covered wagons and women in bonnets and, long-bearded Indian hunting guide guy.
These people probably stole cookies away from Laura Ingalls Wilder somewhere on their trip.
And so, and they're just, they're schlepping their way through the thing, and you know, at one point they find this Native American guy who's been sort of tailing them, and they
find, is that the right word?
Well, they spot him,
they kidnap him.
Okay, well, hold on, I was gonna get to that part. Okay. They realize that he's there, they spot him, and so then eventually they chase after him and they kidnap him. While this is going on, they're also running perilously low on water, and they're hoping that he will guide them to water. And
what better way to conserve water by taking on another mouth to feed?
Exactly. So maybe he is leading them to water. Maybe he isn't leading them to water. He doesn't speak English, and they don't speak Nez Perce or whatever it is he is.
Yeah, it is. And the smirk on his face every time something bad happens to them suggests
he is not leading them to water.
Leading them to water, yeah.
And so that's kind of the entire movie, basically.
Yeah.
It
is slow.
It is slow as molasses.
And it is very quiet.
Yes.
And here's why it doesn't matter that there's a big cast. Old Joy and
Wendy and Lucy.
Wendy and Lucy are these very sort of like up close, personal, intimate, you know, stories. The camera's right up in the face and the body of the person who's talking. And, this movie has a cast of like 12 people, but it takes maybe a good 30 minutes before you know who, and there are name people in this movie.
Yeah, too. There are recognizable actors in the film.
And it takes a good 30 minutes before you realize who is even in the film. Like, if you don't know who is in the movie before you go see it, and you don't, I don't know if their names are at the beginning of the
movie. No, they're not. They're not.
You have no idea
Yeah.
who it is, because she has made everyone anonymous with all these like distancing techniques by like the camera is pulled 100 yards back.
Yeah.
The
women are all wearing those bonnets
on the horizon. The women are all wearing bonnets. The men all have giant beards or like hats on, long shaggy hair. The camera is very frequently placed in the position of the women. Like the women are where the camera is, and the guys who are the ones leading the action are the one, they're off in the distance, and they're having these muttery conversations that you can get maybe like every third word what they're saying. And right. This is intentional. It's an intentional sort of like, it's so quiet that she doesn't even care if you hear much of the dialogue. If you're straining to hear the dialogue, you're not playing along the right way.
Right.
And so she turns everyone anonymous in this film. And just really pulls back on who they are, because their fate is their own fault, and whether or not you know a whole lot about any of them is not necessarily the point.
Right.
The one person who emerges as a stronger character over the course of the movie is Michelle Williams.
Yeah. Who was in Wendy and Lucy and was extraordinary in that film. And like, I remember that you're really pushing for her, like at LA Film Critics, to give her Best Actress. I thought she was amazing. And so that's the only other film with this director that I've seen. But so I kind of knew what I was in for on this one, as far as like, it was going to be quiet. It was going to be slow. It was going to be very sort of, you know, intimate and, you know,
it's not, about Iraq.
Not quotidian, but about the small details and how those affect, you know, your life and that kind of thing. And I gotta say, even going in knowing what I was gonna get and putting myself in the frame of mind to see this kind of movie, I got kind of bored.
Why?
Because
what's boring? What's boring? Tell me why you're bored.
It's hard to say. I just kind of felt like, Even giving allowances that a director is going to take their good sweet time to get from point A to point B, there are ways to do that slowly but still sort of maintain a certain kind of narrative drive. And this movie, I felt like there were long stretches where nothing significant.
Squeak. Squeak.
Yeah, exactly. Squeak, it was going on, squeak. And nothing was
the
being.
The wagon wheels squeak the entire.
Yeah.
Film.
No plot really was being advanced, and again, and it's not like a movie has to be like zing things all the time. But I thought, even by the standards of letting it, you know, unfold slowly, I was just like, "Oh, brother,
I don't think that's boring.
Can we get on with it?"
I don't think that's boring. Here's why I don't think that's boring. I think that when a movie you know, sort of creeps along at that pace.
Mm-hmm.
And there is not much in the way of what you normally think of as plot.
Right.
I think what they are doing is they're giving you, the filmmaker is giving you the opportunity to chill and hang back and watch and observe and think about what's going on for yourself. Like, there's never, when someone refuses, steadfastly refuses to not only tell you what's going on, to shut you out intentionally of the humans in the movie and what they're even saying,
mm-hmm.
then that's your cue to become a part of it, really. To jump in with your own, like, ideas and reflections and stuff. And it gives you kind of time to move around, you know, inside that.
You know, look, theoretically, I get what you're saying, but, okay, I mean, tell me this. Filmmakers that choose this kind of style and that are going to tell stories this way, are there ones that do it better than others? Are there ones that do it successfully and others that do it less so? Is there a standard?
You can't see me right now, but I'm stroking my chin.
Is there a standard? Because the thing is, all of what you're saying, I agree with. And theoretically,
because I'm
on
right.
paper, all that is true. But I'm saying I don't think that she does it as well as she could in this
movie.
All right,
movie. Here's my experience. My experience is that I don't go to film festivals very mm-hmm. often. I have enough to do already
yes.
with my actual job
right.
Of watching Arthur remakes and Your Highness.
Right.
So I tend not to go to film festivals. You go to them with some frequency, and so you have the opportunity to see the bad examples of this kind of thing, whereas I often don't have that opportunity because of just my schedule. So here's what I think happens. I think those kinds of movies exist in greater quantity than what wind up being released
yes.
theatrically, getting distribution.
No question.
And I think festival audiences are more apt to see those films, and just the process of this played at a festival, no one cared, now it's a doorstop, you know, or it's, I mean, back when they were VHS tapes, but right. you know what I mean.
So like, you're saying that because you're starved for this kind of movie, you're more likely to cut it some slack than.
No, that's not what I'm saying okay, at all. I'm saying I think Kelly Reichardt does this perfectly. Okay. I think, well, perfectly is a bad word to use because there's nothing that's perfect, but I think she does it very well, mm-hmm. and I think that because of that, I think the quality of her films is what gets them, you know, into the marketplace. I think someone knocking on our door.
I think it's
no.
it's our neighbor.
No, it's just Jill. Okay, so yeah, whoever else is to answer your question, whoever's doing it badly,
mm-hmm.
I don't know who they are because I don't end up at the festivals very often to okay. see the mediocre.
Because I don't think that she does it as consistently well as she does it in Wendy and Lucy. So there were times in this movie that I was.
Wendy and Lucy is a different kind of movie though, because Wendy and Lucy
I'm not comparing them
designed
as absolutes
to break your heart.
Yes, obviously. Anyway, what I'm saying is there were times in this movie that I did get into the mindset and it worked for me and I went with it. And there were other times where I was like, oh my God, is this ever going to be over?
Here's the funniest thing of all. This movie opened this week
uh-huh.
in New York.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it. It opened this week in New York.
Right.
And it opens, one screen.
It opens this Friday in Los Angeles.
On one other screen.
Right.
And so anyone who's
But apparently had a really good weekend, according to IndieWire.
Well, I'm sure it did.
Yeah.
And the eventually,
yes.
the people who are listening to us talk about it
we'll
right now.
We'll see it on DVD.
Within 6 months, you'll be able to see it on DVD.
Right.
But, you know, this is not a wide release this week. It's a tiny, tiny, tiny film. And by the way, like I said earlier, it is about Iraq. It is about a group of people who put their faith in one guy to lead them off into the wilderness. And he is so inept, but so full of himself.
Right, but talks a good game.
But talks a great game and gets them lost. And every time they start complaining, he starts pointing in the other direction, going, ooh, boogeyman, right over there. I wrote it down in my notebook. Every time he said, hell is full of bears, hell is full of Indians, hell is full of mountains. Right. Every time they start complaining or being worried about something, he starts reminding them that these hell things are all around them.
Right, right.
And so they become more and more paranoid, more and more upset, more and more hysterical. One of the women practically loses her mind.
Oh, yeah, no, she's convinced that an entire tribe of Indians is going to come slaughter them all at any
moment.
So
I didn't think any of this was boring. I thought this was fascinating from start to finish.
Sorry, I didn't. I liked a lot of it, and I think that, you know, it's well done for what it is, but I just there were times where it didn't hold my interest. So.
Why can't you be as brilliant at understanding things as I am?
Oh, God. Yeah.
Well, why not?
Well, as long as we're talking about movies that you thought were better than I did, Hannah opened this week.
Yeah, Hannah's great. But, again, back to the commenters. Apparently, I gave away way too many details in my review, and I didn't really.
Yeah.
I gave away, you know, I did. I gave away details, but I didn't give away plot. I didn't give away. And the details are really what makes this movie so much fun for me. Someone is knocking on our door.
Yeah, well, they can go away.
Well, we got to find out who that is.
Oh, God. All right. I'll talk about
Hannah's about.
Okay, so Hannah stars Saoirse Ronan, the Irish-American actress that was in Atonement and some other stuff. And basically, she is has been raised from birth to be like a child assassin. And, you know, out in this, like, cabin in the middle of Lapland or whatever with her dad, Eric Bana. And the time has come to unleash Hannah into the world and to, you know, get revenge or do whatever it is she's supposed to do. So they give away their location so that the CIA will come after them. And they collect Hannah while Eric Bana runs off into the fjords. And... Kate Blanchett is sort of, you know, CIA boss lady who is trying to like tie up some loose ends with Eric Bana. And, but meanwhile, Hannah wants to kill her and she wants to kill Hannah. And there's a lot of running around. And then Hannah escapes from the super secret compound and gets involved with some hippie tourists. And,
now you're telling too much.
Really?
Now you are telling too much.
That's all in the trailer.
Oh, it is?
Isn't it?
I don't know. I didn't watch the trailer.
I think that's kind of the bait. I mean, that's just how they get rolling. There's a lot more stuff that happens and revelations that are revealed.
Our neighbor Jill just returned a copy of a book to us that I didn't even know we ever owned.
Yeah, that was ours?
You'll Never Make Love in This Town Again is the name of the book. And it's written by Robin, Liza, Linda, and Tiffany. And it's about four young women. This all-true tell-all follows the lives of four young women who traveled to Hollywood in search of fame and fortune, but instead ended up selling themselves to the sex-starved celebrities we all know by name.
Oh, brother.
You will not believe what stars like Dennis Hopper, Billy Idol, David Crosby, Marcus Allen, Rod Stewart, Don Henley, James Caan, Gary Busey, John Ritter, Warren Beatty, Shannon Tweed, Timothy Hutton, and many others do in their spare time with their spare change.
Oh, my. No Charlie Sheen.
Where did this book come from?
I have no
idea. How did we even own this book?
I suspect it was something that was sent to me when I was at the Advocate as a freebie, and I brought it home, and Jill borrowed it and has hung on to it for at least 5 years.
She liked it so much.
dog-eared
pages?
Did she use a highlighter or anything?
Hang on. Let's see if there's any notes.
Did you write in the margin?
In the margin.
Yes, very true.
No.
Okay. Anyway, so Hannah basically, you know, little teen killing machine on the run. And I was into it for a good chunk of the film. And by the end of it, I thought the whole thing kind of unraveled. And so
you keep saying that, but you keep not telling me why you felt it unraveled.
Well, I can't talk about it now because that would involve talking about the ending and the whole.
The ending is great. The ending is. Mm.
I felt like it lost momentum. It's telling a very sort of click 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 into place solid story.
Yeah.
And then at the end of it, it suddenly is like, bleh. Like it's just sort of all over the place, and it's not as focused as it was before, and it just.
Well, because of all the chasing going on, or
the chasing, and then
there kind of has to be chasing.
Of course, there has to be chasing, but you know, they just some of the revelations were sort of ridiculous, and
well. And so is a 13-year-old assassin.
Well, yeah, okay. I mean, somebody pointed out, like, how do they have the magic button in the cabin that would bring the CIA running when they didn't have, like, running water or electricity?
It's a magic box. It's a magic button on a magic box. Yeah. That sends out an electronic wavelength.
What I did really like about Hannah, in addition to Saoirse Ronan's performance, was that they brought back the smack talking teen girl from Tamara Drew, whose name I don't remember, but she's great.
She's my new favorite actress.
She's hysterical. Well, you know, I can't even imitate her. Yeah, but anyway, you know,
you're pretty good at impersonations, but you're gonna have to work on that.
Yeah, I'll tell you. But anyway, so Dave liked it. I was like, I thought it was
alright. It's fast and it's exciting. You never know what's gonna happen next. You are surprised by where they take you. Granted. You don't know where it's going.
True.
You can sit through the whole thing and not know where they're taking you, and that's exciting.
And Cate Blanchett is hilarious because she's doing this sort of Southern accent and she's being all like really tough broad and, you know, cold-hearted government bureaucrat. And I was like, this is hysterical.
Yeah. Cate Blanchett's fantastic in this movie. No, everything about it is fun. It's stylish and it's chilly in that way that I really like, where they don't turn the girl into some sort of like sex pot little fantasy for anybody.
Certainly not. And obviously I would much rather watch this than Sucker Punch any day.
Yeah.
But that's damning with faint praise.
Right.
I didn't like it as much as you, but I mostly liked it. So
it's so great. Go see it.
Yeah. Not great is the aforementioned Arthur remake. I watched the original again last week because they just put it out on Blu-ray with Arthur 2 on the rocks, which don't even bother. But the thing is, just watching the first few minutes of Arthur 2 on the rocks reminded me, oh yeah, like the first Arthur has this very sort of rare alchemy that they somehow made this character likable, that they made this character, you know, like somebody that you would care about, even though he was like this sort of drunken billionaire. Like it rides a very fine line, and it could have not worked very easily, but somehow it works. And then the sequel came out, and the sequel didn't work at all. And then now the remake is happening, and the remake doesn't work either, you know. And it's like it's just one of those rare lightning in a bottle kind of situations that you should never ever try to recapture. But of course, since it made money, they keep trying to recapture it.
Well, because you can't translate 1981 to 2011.
Not in terms of dealing with a character as an alcoholic.
Yeah, right? Like the time of the adorable,
charming, funny drunk.
The adorable drunk is kind of over in terms of like how people respond to that sort of thing. Because in 2011, Arthur gets an intervention immediately.
Yeah,
like he doesn't even get as far as he gets.
It would be like
in this film.
It would be like trying to bring back like Dean Martin and the Gold Diggers, or you know, Foster Brooks, or those guys that like, you know, that was their whole shtick was being so drunk
all the time.
Yeah,
right?
That just doesn't fly.
And the thing about Russell Brand is that
he has a specific skill set.
I like Russell Brand. I think he's really funny, but he's more of a creature than a human being to me. And I can't imagine, sweet granola-ish Greta Gerwig.
Right. Falling for him.
Falling for him on any level. Like that's the kind of girl, I know a million of those girls. Right. And the first thing that they would do is complain about how he reeks of booze fumes coming out of his pores. Like that would be the big issue with
him. I think
that he's got the sensibility of a horny 7-year-old.
Yeah. I think Russell Brand would be like, would be a great character actor. But they're trying to make him into a movie star. And it's like, I mean, I didn't see Get Him to the Greek, but like,
it's full of empty laughs.
Because Alda Snow is a great supporting character for getting Sarah Marshall. But I can't imagine building an entire film around him and making him have to go through some sort of like character arc or whatever.
He doesn't go through really any character arc at all, which is why Get Him to the Greek is actually pretty funny, because he doesn't have to learn anything.
Ah, good, okay.
By the end of the film.
But Arthur does.
Yeah, Arthur has to have this whole personality makeover.
Right.
And it's like, I don't want to see Russell Brand in an AA meeting. I mean, I know in real life he's been clean and sober or whatever for 7 or 8 years or something amount of time. But it didn't affect his ability to be this funny guy.
Right.
Arthur's sobriety affects him and the movie in horrible ways. Yes.
But it was not that good when he was drunk either.
Yeah, you know? It's a miserable experience to watch.
And not even Helen Mirren makes it worthwhile, because she's all right, she's fine, but John Gielgud is so amazing in that role. Like, uh-huh. That was his Oscar-winning role. He's so like sharply, unsentimentally funny in this, you know, and she's not a patch on that, you know. So it's like she's fine. She has a few moments that are funny, but you know, it's a no-win situation for her.
There's a line at the beginning of the movie that Russell Brand says about himself. And he says, "Who could be anything other than charmed by me?" And I'm like, you had not to be asking that kind of thing right out of the gate here. Because there's everything other than charm.
And it's funny, Helen Mirren has a line where when he gives when she's sick and he gives her a plate of SpaghettiOs that I thought was a description of the movie.
It did make me hungry for SpaghettiOs.
Well, I'm sure it did. But it's just something like that's like it's delightful without being any good at all or right. something, you know. I don't know. It's just, yeah, this movie. And maybe if it weren't Arthur, like if they weren't constricted into that, trying to make that plot work.
If it were just a movie about like someone like Russell Brand.
Yes, who falls
being a crazy goon.
Yeah, and falling in love with this, you know.
And if Russell Brand had written the entire thing.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. Every so often, you'll see Russell Brand
goes off the reservation.
Totally going off script. Like, you can feel it. You can tell.
Yeah.
When he's doing it. When he's just ad-libbing something, muttering some crazy aside, you know, that clearly was not written for him. And then he's funny.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, he's being Russell Brand and he's funny. But yeah, you can't make this guy... You can't constrict him into a bad script, and you can't make him a leading romantic lead.
No.
I mean, because in real life, the girl who gets Russell Brand is also a crazy person. And so, you know, it's not like that movie is not one anyone wants to watch either, because because they're like, oh, two circus freaks found each other and fell in love. Like, that's his actual real life.
Yeah.
And so...
And then Jennifer Garner gets saddled with like the worst, most awful character. Like, I mean, the heiress that they force Arthur to marry in the original movie is just kind of a doormat, you know, and if anything, sort of codependent, because she thinks that she can, like, you know, love him into not being a drunk anymore. But in this new one, it's like she's this sort of ruthless corporate climber, and you know, but also
with the full backing of Arthur's mother.
Yes, but also this like kind of creepy sex pot, and it's just like I felt bad for Jennifer Garner. Not that I think she's that great of an actress, but just the character was so ickily created that I just
She again a character that was designed for you to dislike.
Yeah, but in a cheap way.
In a thoughtless way.
Yeah,
and that's just, you know. That's this whole movie. This whole movie's thoughtless.
Yeah. All right. We're running a tad long, although I know Bill Neal likes them long for his car trips. he told me that this week. You want to do Soul Surfer real quick, which I didn't see, but you did.
I saw Soul Surfer, and it's about Bethany Hamilton. Hamilton, I think is her last name.
I think so.
13-year-old surfer, competitive surfer, who got her a shark made off with her arm.
That was how I put it on Movie Line.
Poor girl. A shark made off with her arm. One of her arms. That was what it was. One of her arms. It's a TV movie.
Mm.
It's an inspirational Christian TV movie.
Right.
But
you thought the Christianity stuff was handled interestingly.
I am of two minds. I'm of two minds of this movie, and I will tell you both of them.
Okay. Share your minds.
Free
your mind!
It is a... stop doing that.
Sorry.
It is a movie that is ideally suited for evangelical Christians. They will really, really love this movie, because for the first time in I don't even know how long... maybe ever. evangelical Christians are presented as real people who are not obnoxious or hateful or gross or have like fake, you know, Stepford wife smiles on their faces or
stepping on the necks of gay people.
They're not stepping on the necks of gay people. They're not being raptured, you know, so that Kirk Cameron can go run off and be the president or whatever.
Right.
They're not irritating. They're not irritating on any level. They're just these people who sit around and do a lot of talking about God. I mean, like, and here's the thing. I know lots and lots of people like that. I grew up around people like that. And you know what they do? They sit around and talk about God. They do. Just around breakfast. Hmm. You know, like, well, you know what it says in the book of Jeremiah? Jeremiah 29:11 says blah, 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 blah. I mean, someone actually says that.
Glad I don't know a lot of people
like that. Somebody says that in the movie, and they say it as though it were the most natural thing that a person would just say in the middle of a normal conversation. And so...
And for people like this, they would.
What I like about this movie is that it... Because I am for everybody having a decent representation of themselves on screen. Mm-hmm. You know, no matter what you are... There ought to be at least one movie out there that shows you,
you can point to
as you are, right. You know? And so here's this real chill family of surfers in Hawaii, and they go to church outside in bare feet, you know? Like, you know really? What I mean? It's like, yeah. They have like these little services under this big gazebo.
Is there like an acoustic guitar involved?
Yeah. All that stuff. And so it's, but that's like, and well, here's the thing. I've been reading reviews of this movie, and the reviews are all like, proselytizing. And I'm like, you don't know proselytizing. Yeah. I know proselytizing. Yeah. I'm from Texas. I'm a Baptist from Texas. Proselytizing is when they grab you and won't let you go until you listen to the word of God. Proselytizing
it's
is
see not, me dance.
Yeah. Proselytizing is not the same as simply existing. So right. So here are these people who simply exist. As they are, they're a chill surfer family, and they drink, you know, banana smoothies, and they, you know, hang loose, and but they love Jesus, and they talk about Jesus a lot. Now, having said that, there are some really crazy, funny, hilarious things in this movie that are like great hallmarks of terrible filmmaking. So if you love terrible films,
great hallmarks of Hallmark Channel.
Yeah, if you like bad movies, you're gonna love. I have a little list.
Oh, please share.
The scene where one of her brothers is angry about something and he stomps off, you know, out of the room in flip-flops. And you know how impossible it is to stomp out of a room effectively wearing flip-flops?
Thwack.
Doesn't work well. There's another scene.
It's not a good snitch shoe.
Where Dennis Quaid is sitting by the bed of... Dennis Quaid is the father. Mm-hmm. And he's sitting by the bed of Anna Sophia Robb, who plays Bethany Hamilton.
Right.
And she's in the hospital. And the arm has just been bitten off. Mm-hmm. And they're waiting for her to wake up. And he is sitting there quietly alone reading the Bible when she wakes up. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're paying attention... This is... last night we were watching The Soup and the scene where the scene on One Tree Hill with the worst iced tea refill in the world with the girl. The waitress pours like a trickle of iced tea into a glass. It doesn't fill it up at all.
Walked away.
And then pours another trickle into another glass and it doesn't even fill it up like to the halfway point. And then she walks away. Well, in this scene, Dennis Quaid is reading the Bible. And if you're paying attention to the actual Bible that he is holding in his hand, you realize that Dennis Quaid has the Bible open to the upside very down. End.
So he's reading Revelation?
So for comfort in his time of crisis with his daughter who just got attacked by a shark, he's reading the book of Revelation. This is like the most psychedelic, nonsensical...
Freak out
chapter of the entire Bible. The one that no one understands. The one that no one can ever make heads or tails of. But they all think they can.
I would say that guy who says the world is ending on May 21st seems to feel like he's cracked it.
He's not reading the Psalms. He's not reading...
The Song of Solomon.
He's not reading something to give him comfort in this time of trial. Dennis Quaid is reading... And I saw the beast heading over the mountain.
You know, like, and the four horsemen.
Yeah. And the fire consumed the earth and everyone in it. And there was weeping and gnashing of teeth. You know, like all of that. Like that's what...
Maybe he was feeling blue.
Dennis Quaid doesn't know the Bible from a box of sugar pops. Like he just opened it up, And he's like, okay, I'm in this scene. I'm reading the Bible. It doesn't matter what it is.
I've been here. I've been sitting here a long time, so I'd be at the end by now.
Every chapter. Yeah. Every chapter is the same. So, and there's no comment on what's being read. There's right. no. It doesn't say I was just reading in the book of blah, blah, blah. Uh-huh. It's not like the movie makes any notice. It's not like the movie points out any specific thing about him having just read a part of the Bible. But if you're looking at the Bible, if you happen to notice it in his hands, you notice that it's open to the back.
Well, maybe maybe his edition had like end notes or, you know, questions for discussion.
Questions for discussion. No. He's reading the Bible. He's reading the book of Revelation.
Not the teen Bible. maybe there was some chicken soup for the soul stories at the end of it. You know, who knows?
There's another great scene where Anna Sophia Robb is picking up one of her old Barbie dolls from when she was a kid. And she picks it up and she tears off one of the arms.
Ooh.
Now, for all I know, Bethany Hamilton did that in real life. Maybe she did tear off one of her Barbie arms out of frustration and anger. But it doesn't play well on screen. But the best, best moment is they all go on a mission trip to Thailand, which apparently really happened. Yeah, these are nice Christians. These are people who like go on mission trips to help orphans.
Right.
These are not irritating butthole Christians that get in your face and scream at you.
These are Prop 8 Christians.
These are people who go on like you know, rescue sort of journeys to places like, you know, Mexico after an earthquake or Thailand after a tsunami, like that kind of thing. So they all go to Thailand after big tsunami.
I know what we're getting here.
And two things happen. First of all, there's Carrie Underwood, who is in this movie. And in my review, I said that she has just won the contest, beating out Justin Guarini as the very worst actor to ever come from American Idol.
Oh, now you didn't see College with Kevin Covey in it.
Didn't I?
I did. I don't think you did.
Yeah, but you know what? Carrie Underwood is going to beat. I don't care how bad he might have been. She's got to beat. She plays the youth minister in the film. Carrie Underwood goes to Thailand looking exactly like Carrie Underwood. Okay, now, I know from mission trips.
She brought hair and makeup with her. You know.
I know from mission trips.
It's in her rider.
And you know what you look like on a mission trip? You look like hell. You are wearing your worst clothes. You are sweating. You have not had a shower in 2 days, because you know what? No one else has had a shower either in the land of devastation where you are doing your little missionizing work. You haven't had a hot shower in a week. You are grimy. You are sweaty. You are gross. I have seen the photos of friends who have come back from these things, and they all look like they've been run over by a bus. Carrie Underwood looks just like Carrie Underwood in Thailand. She is put together, makeup, little earrings on, everything. And she's delivering medical attention to Thai extras in the film. And there's a scene where she's talking to Anna Sophia Robb, and she's just lazily, clumsily wrapping some dude's head in a bandage. Like, if he's got actual serious medical injuries that require a bandage being wrapped around his head, she's just sort of like, uh-huh, yeah, whatever. Let me tell you something, Anna Sophia Robb, about your arm. God really cares about your arm. And like completely mishandling this person's head. Then Anna Sophia Robb she runs into like a little 3-year-old who's been orphaned in the tsunami, who's terrified of the water.
Imagine
that. Again, for all I know, this happened in real life. But it wasn't portrayed on film particularly well. So she goes under the water. And she's like, come play in the water with me, little 3-year-old kid. And the kid's like, I don't know, you get away from me. The kid runs away. And the look on this kid's face is like, this one-armed white devil wants to drown me. But then, like, by the power of her spirit, you know, it's not only the little 3-year-old kid in the water, but, like, the whole village they go out and they all frolic in the water. And I'm like, there are dead bodies floating in this water. What is happening in this movie? Yeah. So here's the thing. I remember on movies.com, I gave this movie 2.5 stars because it's a bad movie.
Right.
At its best, it is a high quality TV movie with a lot of really insanely ridiculous things that take place in it. But it's not evil. It's not hateful. It's good hearted, and it gives, you know, it gives Christians a good name.
Right.
Yeah. So, it doesn't give movie making a good name.
You can't have everything.
Yeah. It's a weird movie because there's so much good and so much bad about it, like, at the same time. It was co-written by one of the producers of Baywatch.
Woo!
He was at the screening I was at.
Oh, brother.
Yeah. And he's an interesting cat. I can't even go into all about that.
Oh,
but,
brother. Well. All right, we need to wrap up because this is our longest show ever, but it's been...
Well, how many minutes?
We're like 50.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
We covered a lot this week. So, DVD recommendations real quick. I'm going to say Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, because I think a lot of people didn't see it, and it's a terrific movie.
I don't have a DVD recommendation. I have a YouTube recommendation.
Okay.
Friday night, we went to Cine Family, and we saw two short Werner Herzog documentaries.
Yes,
one's called Huey's Sermon, and the other one is called
God's Angry Man,
about Gene Scott, the televangelist. Neither of them are available on DVD that I know of, that I can find. I looked for them this morning online. There are sermons by Huey Rogers, I think is his last name.
H-U-I-E.
Yeah, they're on YouTube.
Really?
They're not the one that was in this documentary, which this documentary is fantastic. This guy is on fire. It's like if Little Richard was your preacher. Like, he gets everybody like rolling, and he's hollering and he's jumping around, and he doesn't even know what he is saying by the end of the movie. He's just making stuff up. He's angry about gays and solar power, and like he gets his facts a little wrong sometimes about these issues.
But that's not important.
But that's not important. What's important is that he's so excited and so happy. I was totally into that guy. I would go to his church. Just to watch him do his thing.
Really, faggot?
He seems to be around still. It seems like he's still alive and still preaching. I would go just to check it out. Because, I mean, he's exciting.
I would go with you if we could make out in front of him.
Eh. Let him have that. Who cares?
I care. I'm sick of it.
But the one that's on, but the documentary that we did see, that we also saw, God's Angry Man, is in its entirety on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
It's like six parts.
And it's like 45 minutes.
It's like 45 minutes total. It's great. It's about like the really weird, contradictory, like paranoid, bizarre personality of Gene Scott.
Yeah, like the fundamentalism and the fundraising. But the weird thing about it is that I guess it was made for German television.
Mm, yeah.
And rather than, you know, subtitle it in German, you instead get Werner Herzog translating everything that Gene Scott says into German. So then when you watch it in America, you have to read the subtitles and listen to Werner Herzog.
Because you hear Werner Herzog
Werner Herzog voice do Gene Scott. And I'd really just rather hear Gene Scott. But anyway,
so
it's still an interesting movie.
It's called God's Angry Man. It's on YouTube. So watch it there.
Cool. So thanks again for joining us this week. Quick shout out to our friends in podcast land. Gray Drake's Popcorn Mafia, the Comedy Couch of Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, Fozzie Bear's Podcast, and Blowhard with Malcolm Ingram.
I can't believe we went so long. We need to get a timer.
We were on fire. What can I tell you? Just like Huey. we don't even know what we're saying at this point. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. I know some people had a hard time downloading the show last week, and I don't know what that's about, and hopefully you will not have that problem this week. But thank you for listening, and join us next time. Bye.